Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ROH Review Interviews. I'm your host, three-time pro wrestling author Oliver Newman, and unfortunately, my co-host, Stephen Jackson, can't be here today. But I am delighted to be joined by the manager of champions, ROH World Tag Team Champions, the American Wolves and the Kings of Wrestling, Adam Pearce as the NWA Heavyweight Champion, and Eddie Edwards as the TV champion, and the second ever and longest reigning ROH top of the class trophy winner, Shane Hagedorn. How are you doing today, Shane?
I'm wonderful. Bright and early over here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Doing well. Thank you.
Very good. It's definitely bright and early for Shane, because when I checked the time difference, I was like 1 p.m. equals 9 a.m. in the USA. And then I Googled it and it was 8 a.m. And I was like, oh, Shane, my time difference is a little bit off. Can you do this a little bit earlier? And I was all set up ready to go at 8 a.m. And Shane's like, oh, wow, this guy is actually, you know, come early as opposed to being late, which is obviously a terrible thing to do in wrestling. So, yep, you can always count on me to be early.
I was up and ready anyway. I had to drop my son off at school, so.
You was. We've got a time frame and stuff, actually. I was going to stick to my time frame, so I will time, Shane.
Sounds good.
Yeah, 1 second. I'm being run by my father. That's always good. He just doesn't know when things are happening. 1 second. Okay, we got an hour to play with being a part of the Hangman 3 with Adam Pearce, BJ Whitmer, and Brent Albright. Do you have any favorite matches, moments, or stories you might want to share?
It was always a running joke that there were four of us, but it was called the Hangman 3. So it's the Hangman 3 featuring Shane Hagedorn, the Hangman 3 featuring Shane Hagedorn, also appearing Shane Hagedorn. And So I think prior to me, Gable aligning me with Pierce, and especially in the early stages of my career, like me and Davey Andrews as a tag team essentially wanted to be what the American Wolves would become. In 2004, what we wanted to be was what the American Wolves were in 2010. I pictured myself much more of wanting to be, for lack of a better descriptor, I would say a strong style heel. Because that's what I enjoyed. I enjoyed watching, like, the Noah. At this time, you know, Pro Wrestling Noah was on a huge upswing on the backs of, like, Kenta and Marufuji in particular. And I was a huge fan of Suwa's. And it started getting, you know, also seeing some of the Dragon Gate stuff. And, you know, getting into, because we had a lot of, it's a nice thing working in the office is the kind folks at, like, Puro DVD Source or Puro Resu DVD would trade their stuff for Ring of Honor DVDs. And so Gabe would want to see this stuff too. So he would just say, you know, send them whatever they want and just get whatever you want. But these are the things I want, like specific stuff that he wanted to see. Yeah. So I would get, random Dragon Gate shows or Diamond Ring shows, Noah shows, All Japan. I have like a stack of like 92, 93 All Japan TV for like the entire, those entire like 2 years, and that was the style I wanted to do. infamously, to those of us, ripped off Kenta on Final Battle 2005. I ripped off one of his moves on a dark match. I had been doing it for quite a while, but I on the same show that he was debuting for Ring of Honor, I'm doing Kenta's moves on a dark match. Just one of the, you know, it's the one where he, like, you know, just kind of back kicks the dude in the face while they're laying on the ground. Yeah, it's part of my offense. It wasn't like I was doing a go to sleep or a Busakai knee on the dark match, but regardless, just remember getting ribbed for that one. He ripped off Kenta at his debut show. All right. So then once I got aligned with Pierce, I kind of, I had to become like this old school traditional heel is what Gabe wanted me to do. And it's contrary to what I wanted to do, but I just, you know, that's what I'm being asked to do. So that's what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of fun with that, like, time frame. And there's what was it? I think it may have ended up in, it was in a Video Wire. I think it was a Video Wire. Or if it was a backstage promo, I'm not sure. Of them shaving my head. Because I had somehow messed up shaving my own head. And it really, like, irritated Roderick Strong that day. At that point in his life, everything, anybody else that irritated Roddy. And so I agreed, for the sake of, I was going to do it anyway. It was one of those, like, I'm going to cut my hair after this weekend anyway. So whatever, have fun. Like, here, use the clipper, shave my head. So they shaved it into they just kept calling it a fryer tuck. So just all the only hair I had was right here, like in a circle, like a horseshoe above my ears. And it's in a promo, and it's just me, like, staring at the camera, trying to do my best. I'm like Private Pile from Full Metal Jacket. And as Pierce is, you know, shaving my head. And then it turned into this thing where Roger kept wanting to shave my head again. Like, no, that was a one-time thing for this promo because I was going to cut my hair anyway. You're not shaving my head again just to amuse yourself. Not happening. Yeah. But that was fun. Getting to be ringside for what I think to this day is one of, like, the hidden gems of Ring of Honor's catalog. The NWA title match that Pierce and Albright had in New York. That's just an amazing match. Even though, you know, a few months prior to that, Albright almost killed me. I wish I would. Through laziness and sloppiness, and that is why he's earned the nickname of Captain Safety. he was supposed to give me, like, a awesome bomb type thing over the top rope.
Yeah.
And through a table. And instead of tossing me, he just dropped me. And my feet hit the top rope and caused me to moonsault. And the only thing that prevented me from tombstoning the concrete floor of the Hammerstein Ballroom was a table. My head caught just enough of the edge of the table to stop me from coming down straight, you know, vertically and getting tombstoned on the concrete. That was, and that was I didn't even realize how bad it was until I saw it on tape. And then it's actually it's on YouTube. One of the side, few years later, a side project that Delirious did called Pro Wrestling Respect. His name was Eric Santa Maria. He was like our in-house editor.
Okay.
And he would put together a lot of the Video Wires. He actually did the first Wrestling Road Diaries.
Yeah.
For Cabana. He put together, like, pipe videos for everybody who was on the Respect roster, and he used that clip on my personal Pro Wrestling Respect type video. So look it up. It's on there. Just look up Pro Wrestling Respect Shane Hagedorn, and you can see Brent Albright almost kill me. that's one of the not so good moments of the Hangman 3 portion. But that match from New York, amazing. And then, you know, it ended up leading into getting to work with the Sweet and Sour Ink. And
stop reading my notes, Shane.
Seriously? I guess, you know, it's all that practice I have doing, I'm going to get my first cheat plug in here, doing my honorable mention podcast every Tuesday.
It's only taking 55 minutes to do a cheat plug. That's impressive. Yeah. That is impressive. I'm not going to lie. you've got a fantastic memory for a wrestler, I tell you. Most of them don't know
the what they did yesterday. I remember what I did. I don't ever remember when. I have a hard time remembering when.
Oh, okay.
You know, because part of that, I think, is we go to the same venue so many times. Like, I remember this happened. I just don't remember which time. You know, it's like, I know I was in New York when this happened. I don't remember whether it was May of 2007 or 2008. But, you know, I remember what happened, just not when. Alex Payne is my that's what I have him for. I've kept him around in my life for a decade because of that. He remembers all the stuff that I can't.
Yeah.
I joke with him that he'd be a better host sometimes for the podcast because he actually remembers things in more detail than I do. he fills in the gaps for me. But insane that, yeah, as I'm reading your notes, but yeah, the Hangman 3 transitioning into being part of this Sweet and Sour Ink stuff. Yeah, that was, I'm getting a little sad, but also you know, happy at the same time, because it's happy memories, because getting to work with Larry Sweeney,
yeah,
one of a kind.
He was incredible, wasn't he?
Yeah, just. You just watching, going back and watching the older shows for my podcast, or the Honorable Mention podcast, which we go through and we watch, for the most part, we try to stick to shows that I was involved with. Sometimes we watched a few of the shows after I was done with Ring of Honor, and some of the stuff from before I came in. Mm-hmm. But like when we watch the stuff that Sweeney is on and involved with, it's just so talented.
Yep.
And just getting to do, like, I did a road trip down to Full Impact Pro in Florida with him. And just me and him, so I had a point during the drive where it was just me and him awake and everybody else was asleep in the back of the van, and just like talking to him and about music and religion, and finding out that he went to the same high school as one of my best friends, just graduated a year after her, in Chicago, New Trier, his name, the school where, the Breakfast Club movie, the library scenes in the Breakfast Club are from that school.
Okay.
And just getting to know him and talking to him and watching him work, and, it's just, he was, yeah, so insanely talented. And when I worked Chikara, he was part of a, like, 10-man tag I did. That was, like, the second match I had in Chikara. And he just stood out so much from that world because he was so different from, you know, the Lucha-esque promotion. And he was over the top, but in a different way than anything else that was there. And just always such a standout. And, you know, it's been said a million times about him since he passed away that he'd be a millionaire, you know, over and over again, in the wrestling landscape as it is in 2020.
Yeah. He was born 20 years too soon, wasn't he? Or too late, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, and then with all that, the rest of it too, it's like, then I got to work with Tank Toland, who's awesomely underrated. It was great. I got paid to beat up Bobby Dempsey, which is fun. Got to work with Hiro, Cassius Ohno, and Claudio Castagnoli, Cesaro, and Sarah Del Rey, who is amazing. And like, she had come in. Her first show was the same show as when I won the Top of the Class trophy. Like, officially, she came in for that Destiny event, and getting to work with Davey Richards through that, and Eddie Edwards, who I had first met when I was still training, before he went to the Noah Dojo and was just a chubby kid with the braids that he since now wears again. In Impact, same kind of similar look.
He's gone full circle.
But Eddie being one of like the most supremely talented wrestlers, he's just a good dude in general. And gay, God, who else was in there?
Everyone.
Yeah, it was such a great group. To work with. And then, you know, it kind of, I guess, I don't know, having that kind of made up for the fact that I was not, you know, I ended up, because of, you know, injuries and booking changes and whatnot, I wasn't really wrestling so much anymore in Ring of Honor. come like, God. Glory Bound or 8? The arena in Philly.
Yeah.
Fractured my shoulder.
Jeez.
And that was like the last match I had. And that was still under Gabe. Yeah, because that was the show where I found out, where I was told that Gabe was, you know, being let go. I fractured my shoulder that night, and so that was the last match I had for Ring of Honor, and that was September of 2008 until Final Battle 2010. Oh, wow. And it's just manager stuff after that point.
Still reading my notes. we've gone past the hour. Well, according to my Skype, we have. Mm-hmm. I haven't had a
I still got time.
Oh, we've got 10 seconds according to my phone.
Yeah.
So we got to make sure we use them correctly. Yeah, I've still got a few things to talk about. That's okay, Shane. It's carrying on.
Yeah, I got some time before we got to head out.
I appreciate that. Okay. Just going back to Larry Sweeney a second. Imagine like the performance center learning like promo techniques from him.
I know.
It would be incredible, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, just him in that role as like a teacher to people.
Yeah.
It'd be amazing. I think I'm excited because one of the shows we're doing upcoming involves like him and it's we did. I can't remember for the life of me if it ever made air. Maybe it did as a video wire. Like we did a whole promo with him and Ric Flair together. and I can't. I think it made like video wire.
I'm sure it's out there somewhere. Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing that again because I haven't seen that in a decade probably.
Yeah. Like Sweet and Sour Ink, do you have like top moments or matches of your association with the group?
I mean the moments it was a lot of it was very little like in ring, and we had a lot of fun with the Bobby Dempsey stuff.
Yeah,
of just getting creative with those promos and. The assorted segments we would do, like, you know, putting Bobby in the ice bath at the one. It was one of the it was one of the Boston area buildings of the 700 different Boston area buildings we ran, and like dunking him in the ice bath, or for the brief time when Seidel was part of the group, and they made Bobby essentially the horse of their chariot, and he had to pull them around like on a track, or the Edison, New Jersey building, they had a steam room and did a sequence of like putting Bobby in the steam room. And then his brother Derek had quit wrestling in September of 2006.
Okay.
And so just as a joke, we put Bobby in the steam room and Derek, who was half of Bobby's size, who came out of it. And the hero and Sweeney like selling it about Bobby, you know, Derek coming out of the steam room, or was it just Hero? I can't remember time frame of when it happened, if it was but it just, you know, and then the reaction of everybody, oh my god, Bobby, look how much weight you lost being in the steam room, and then Bobby comes out, hey bud, and it's Derek who was in the steam room the whole time. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, the thing with the Sweet and Sour, and in particular when it would kind of dwindle down to just, you know, me, Hero, Claudio, and Sarah, family.
Yeah.
Very, very much like our little family. Yeah.
Well, questions and topics from my co-host, Steven Jackson.
Yeah.
Once again, which is what you've just touched on, still reading my notes. I don't know how you're doing it, Shane. Inspirations when transitioning into manager for Kings of Wrestling and the American Wolves.
So I went through this time frame of like, so for, I guess, all right, so I'm a huge comic book nerd.
Okay.
And as thus, specifically X-Men and Batman.
Okay.
And I have very strong, like, I guess, bent towards continuity and things making sense.
Mm-hmm.
And having like connective tissue between everything. And so I try to maintain at least internally like some connective tissue. So I got hurt. Pierce was gone. Like the same show. It was the same show I fractured my shoulder was Pierce's last show, because then he would end up taking over the booking a month later. So I purposely stopped giving, like, I stopped dressing well. Just where I started wearing like straight bum, like dirty pants and like dirty shirts, and stopped like taking care of my hair and everything. And we did a promo with me and Sweeney, where, like, Sweeney telling me to get my act together, and me just kind of like moping about in promos and background and whatnot. And then, slowly kind of like getting my stuff back together and getting, just putting on nicer clothes, nicer shirts, stop wearing a like hat to the ring. And then when Sweeney was no longer in Ring of Honor, I felt like I guess I always felt like I was comparing myself to him. Even though I was entirely different. Like, I would have people telling me, "Oh, you need a gimmick." I'm like, the gimmick is my manager. Like, oh, at one point here, I have an idea of like being a hype man, like a Don King. I'm like, that's not me. Like, I would be doing it, and it'd be very much me like playing a part. So I just went out there and I just did what felt right. It's like I evolved into, now I'm wearing like the dress shirts and ties, and now I have champions that I'm managing. So I'm, trying to dress the part for that, and just constantly being engaged with what's going, with what I'm watching. Like, I liked not knowing if I could what was going on. Like, knowing when I had things I had to do in the match, but I didn't like knowing, so I could respond naturally to the other stuff. Knowing like, okay, I have to do X before X, is this. So when W happens, I know I need to be ready for X. And beyond that, and I just kind of respond to things naturally. And one of the biggest compliments I ever got from that was from Mike Bennett, Mike Kanellis, for anybody who just knows him from TV, telling me that it was a match between Claudio and Christopher Daniels. Plymouth, maybe? And him telling me he spent the whole match watching me. And he was just entertained by me and how I was at ringside. And that was like one of the biggest compliments I ever got, because like these two, world traveled, two of the best that have done it in my generation. And he was watching me. And it's just, that was like, I guess I'm doing something right, in how I'm approaching this manager thing. And I tried to present it to take it differently too, whether I was out there with the Wolves or whether I was out there with the Kings. Like I said, the Kings felt much more like the family, and the Wolves were my team that I managed. And it's, I don't know, and I didn't put I guess I didn't put a ton of thought necessarily into it, and just kind of responded in real time. Yes, I guess that's how I'll phrase it. Yeah, I responded in real time to what I was doing as a manager.
Was there a favorite match for Kings of Wrestling and American Wolves separately?
Well, I mean, my favorite match at all in the Kings of Wrestling was the one I was in. So when I got the Final Battle 2010 six man with me and the Kings against the Briscoes and Papa Briscoe, I always had this desire when I started of all I want. It wasn't to go work WrestleMania. It wasn't to go. I just had a desire to be part of a video package and a hype video. So I achieved that dream with Final Battle 2010. And getting to be part of one of the three, like, main matches for that night.
Yeah.
Cena and Generico's unsanctioned fight without honor, the title match between Roderick Strong and Davey Richards, and then our six-man tag. So that is, and it also being the first match that I'd had in 2 years.
Yeah.
It was frustrating getting to for me because of how I was asked to do it. I was asked to play the part of like the manager who doesn't know anything, doesn't know what they're doing. And I'm like, got like a 5-year track record here of having matches. It's really hard to pretend like I don't know what I'm doing. I can't put on a basic headlock, but the way Cornette sold it to me was, by God, Shane, J.J. Dillon is one of the greatest damn workers I ever saw in my life, and you'd never know it if you watched him. I was like, all right, well, if J.J. Dillon can play dumb, then I guess I can figure that one out, too. all right.
And your favorite match or memory working with the American Wolves?
The Davey and Eddie would go on to have several world title matches and that I was not a fan of how they got to those matches as far as the booking aspect, but the in-ring was good enough.
Yeah.
But their TV title match they had on HDNet, watched it back about a year ago, and that's their best match, more so than either of any of the world title matches they had. And like, I love watching that match between the two of them. As a tag team, all of their stuff with Steen and Generico, their stuff with the Briscoes, and the same with the Kings and the Briscoes, particularly the match from Death Before Dishonor 8, I think it is, from Canada. That match, the first Wolves and Kings match, was the second, the first Wolves and Kings match, the one, then there's the one that I wish I was involved with, but I wasn't. The only time that all four of them were on the same team was from the SoCal Showdown show, and I was not there. Didn't get to travel a lot to the faraway places because somebody had to stay in the office and do work. Didn't get to go to Japan. Didn't get to go to England for the UK shows. Somebody had to stay in the office and do work.
Seriously, it's like you're in Steven Jackson's mind. Because he was like, oh, ask him about the UK shows, and then you've just...
I didn't get to go. Somebody had to stay behind, and somebody has to mail out your DVDs and your T-shirts. Couldn't shut down the office for the entire week, so everybody could go. I was more mad about the Japan shows because my birthday September 13th, and one of the Japan shows was on my birthday, and I wanted to go so bad, and I did not get to go. Because that is my biggest wrestling regret, is when I had the opportunity, the offer to go train at the Noah Dojo, I did not take the chance when it was offered to me in 2006. Equal part nerves, fear, worry, concern. I got in my own head about it, I guess you could say, and just end up taking up Ken Hariyama from the No offices and Runakata, who was passed on, and he was an awesome dude. I didn't take them up on the offer when I got asked if I wanted to come over there. But yeah, that's I didn't get to go on any of those overseas trips because you fans out there had to get their merchandise.
So when I was buying 20 ROH DVDs at the time, you were the one mailing them out.
I was one of them. Yeah. we're always a small office. I think at our most, we 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like 7 people in the office. Right. I think it was like the most, of which, one of those 7, I'm like including Gabe in that count. It's like, 1, 2, and then Gabe. And then in the office of that did the packing and the shipping and everything, there was at the most 4 of us.
Yeah.
And at the end of the run of the original office, office, there was just me. Like the last year, basically, of the original Bristol office still functioning, 2013. It was just me.
Last man standing.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, there were two of us left, but I was the one at that point who was, you know, doing the packing and shipping.
Oh, wow. So, talking about American Wolves and the Kings of Wrestling, did you have any creative input in the feud between the two?
No, because I was, I'm extremely disappointed in how that went. I feel like there was so much more that could have been done with the two teams, you know, going head up with each other. But it wasn't in the cards at all. It was a shame because, like, during Eddie's world title run, he had a really good match with Hiro. I can't remember if it was Revolution USA or Revolution Canada. But it was like that. One of them was a tag match with the Wolves, and the other one was the match against Hiro. But I think there's so much more that could have been done with that. But, you know, we were... You know, once I was removed, because I always felt like I was the only thing keeping the Wolves from being, like, full-blown baby faces, because they were just getting straight baby face reactions.
Yeah.
And I think we were headed in the direction of, you know, the Briscoes feud and continuing that, and Davey and Eddie were going off to do their own thing, and you never knew if Davey was going to be there. He might decide to quit, become a paramedic or a fireman or a waiter or whatever else he was, you know, off doing. So it just did not sync up to do like a real program with the two teams, unfortunately.
Yeah. We touched on this earlier, any extra roles behind the scenes. I think you've probably covered that. You did everything.
my Facebook bio, where you have the worked at, is like, mine says like works at everything at Ring of Honor. Formerly worked at everything at Ring of Honor. Yes, I at some point did everything. I was the timekeeper, the bell ringer for one show. Of course, a screwed up finish on that show. That's not my fault. It was the last stand.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did everything. I wrote the content for the website. I basically wrote all, wow. I would say almost all the content for the website from when Pierce took over until I got let go. So that was 5 years of writing the website content. Mm-hmm. I wrote, like, once we started doing the comp DVDs again, the, you know, 2-3 disc comp DVDs and everything, I was like, the text that was on the DVDs was written by me. programs were written by me, for the most part. There was some older stuff that was done by Josh Treeneman and Gabe's, then, you know, Rebecca Sapolsky did some of them, and there's a few other people who contributed, like, to the, these old full color programs. And then we started doing just like these black and white paper ones, and that was, you know, written by me and formatted by Alex Payne. And that, you know, thing I never did that I can think of was actual physical editing of shows and graphics work, because I don't know how to use Photoshop. That was Alex Payne, and Eric Santa Maria would do the editing stuff in house.
Why?
I produced the promos for a lot of the like DVDs and video wires. I almost all of those like sit down interviews kind of that started with Nigel's career retrospective that we did. Almost all the interviews from that point until 2013. The last one I did was the Jimmy Jacobs and BJ Whitmer one. I think they ended up calling it A Decade in the Making. I called it Blood Brothers. Because they took 6 months. They didn't release from when I filmed it to when they actually released it was like 6 months. Like the Adam Cole interview, Eddie Edwards interview, the Kevin Steen Hell Rising, that infamous interview. I've shot within them one with some assistance sometimes from some of the Sinclair people for lighting and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But like I produced, directed, wrote the questions, like did all that. You know, one man banded that a lot of the times. I did a lot. Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
We were, and that's the thing. And it wasn't just me who, you know, not who. We were a small place. Everybody had to take on, almost everybody who worked there had to take on many, many hats to make things work.
Yeah,
that's why I say we were a very small operation. You know, as I looked at it as a fan before I started working there, we were a small operation that looked bigger than we were. We presented, much like wrestlers, we present bigger than we are as a company.
Yeah, fair enough. And then another one of Steven's questions. Favorite ROH match you wrestled? I think we touched on the fandom. As a wrestler, I think we've touched on that. So, because you said about the Briscoes, six-man tag, didn't you, with Papa Briscoe and stuff. So, favorite ROH match that made you proud to be an employee?
Brian Danielson and Kenta, Glory Banner 5, Night 2, New York City. I would put that actually in my top five matches of all time, like cross company. Like without a doubt. Brian, as from training with him to watching him in matches to watching his career path, Brian Danielson, Daniel Bryan is, for my tastes, the best wrestler that we have right now. He can do, I liken him to Eddie Guerrero. He can do every aspect of professional wrestling. Whether you look at it from the TV driven sports entertainment, acting, promo, backstage segment, to your indie wrestling work rate, five-star match, to just the comedy, every single aspect of pro wrestling, you can check off that box for Brian Danielson. And that's the same way, like, I feel, that's why I like him to Eddie Guerrero, because I look at Eddie Guerrero in the same way. Every single, you can check, tick off every single box you could possibly connect to any form of professional wrestling. And so that, and then that match with Kenta, you know, it also plays into it. That time frame is when we were training together. I was watching him go through his shoulder injuries and that the injuries he suffered around, you know, in August of that year going into that match. And I actually stood watching that match with Alex Shane in the crowd, because Alex Shane was visiting visiting at the time into the States. And just like that match. For me, that's still that is my favorite Ring of Honor match. It's one of my top five matches, I would say, of just wrestling period. It's such an emotional roller coaster, and like I said, it's the style of wrestling that I get the most out of.
I think it's actually available for free on ROH's YouTube channel.
I think they probably did as one of their Throwback Thursdays,
Yeah. So for anyone that wants to check out Shane Hagedorn's really impressive recommendation, it's on the ROH website.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as we reach the 1 hour, 25-minute mark, which means this has got to be released in at least two parts. Yeah, we'll finish on your ROH podcast, I think. So, how did the honorable mention come to be?
So my friend Jeff Schwartz, who was infamously known as JSWO on the old ROH message boards before Kevin Steen blew them up and made them disappear. I've been friends with him for years. He was one of the first people who ever asked me to like come do an interview years ago when he was helping out with like a radio station in Cleveland, because he's from that area. And he almost just a little over 2 years ago reached out to me and was like, I had this idea of doing a Ring of Honor centric podcast in the Conrad mold. It's, you know, with the vein of 83 weeks and, you know, something to wrestle. And he's like, you're the first person I thought of being able to do it, because obviously like Kerry Silken wasn't going to do it. He's still working for the company. That's some passion, you know, and he, pretty much anybody else who would possibly be doing this is involved somewhere else. And as somebody who was in there as, you know, wrestler in office, you know, it said it, you had a unique perspective on all of this, and would you be interested? And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever, I'll give it a shot, why not? And here we are 2 years later, we just finished recording our 100th some episode, where we do some content for Patreon, patreon.com/anhonorablepod, like watch alongs, and it's, you know, doing like watching back over the HDNet stuff, and just been doing that now for 2 years, and it's really fun and it's fulfilling and in some ways cathartic to go back through some of the stuff, like the episode we did where I talked in extreme detail about my future endeavoring from the company. It's been therapeutic as well as a fun trip through memory lane and through my career and what I experienced, and then, you know, going off in other topics, like, you know, covering my time in Chikara, or he keeps wanting to talk about my time doing Full Impact Pro, but then whatever. And I mean, it's getting a little tougher now to squeeze it in there because now I travel every week with AEW, working with merchandise stuff for their live events and writing content for their website. But you know, I'm still going to keep doing it as long as I can make it fit into the schedule. But yeah, so it drops every Tuesday. Lately, it's been pretty consistently up when it gets posted super early in the morning. Every Tuesday morning on pretty much all of your podcast providers. So,
yeah.
And
and that's where we can kind of end the interview, really. We kind of reached out to ROH wrestlers and alumni, and Shane was one of the first to respond. And all I have to say is thank you very much for your patience with some of the messages I was sending you a little bit off. And, coming through and giving me just under an hour and a half of your time with 15 minutes before you actually have to leave. So we managed to do that right. And fantastic interview, Shane. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure. It's always fun to kind of to go back and look on the stuff, you know, especially with some distance from it. You know, I can look back on a lot of it a much more in a better headspace than if I had done this interview, say, like 5 years ago. So it's much easier to look back and have fun with it and look at the good stuff and the best parts of it, and share that with people. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing I like. Right now, I know they're saying it will become available. Right now, so much of that history of Ring of Honor is lost. Just because Sinclair has not made it available. It's the one thing I really hope changes over the next year, is that the rich history of the company becomes more available. And create our own history. We'll just create our own history was a line thrown at me when they first took over in 2011. This is something that to this day I still hope changes, because there's so much rich history in that company. That fans like they deserve to see, and it's something good from the larger wrestling scope too. Just the impact the company had on the face of the wrestling landscape. Most of what the people you watch on the big, like the bigger stages, a lot of them came through Ring of Honor, whether it be a little time spent there, or you know, a decade spent there. In the instance of like a Roderick Strong, for example, it's. Hopefully it will become more available, that history.
In terms of that, Shane, last night on Free Enterprise, Joe Koff said that they're going to be putting up the back catalogue. And during the intermission, they showed a match between Jay Briscoe and Mark Briscoe from Honor Invades Boston.
Oh, nice.
So maybe they're making...
Hopefully they stick to that promise, because there are people that I, you know, that I still talk to there occasionally who I do know that is important to them. A joke off, it's just whatever's gonna make the company some money. But there are people who actually care about the history and they want to keep it alive and they fight for it.
Yeah.
So that's those are the people that I hopefully their voices are loud enough to make it happen.
Yeah. Well, me and Stephen, for example, you know, with the ROH review, been doing this 13 weeks into the 14th week. The UK TV deal seems to be up in the air, and we're carrying it on because, you know, we've got access to it on the club. So we want ROH to strive and thrive and want it to be respected in terms of the history with the past and present show coming up and stuff. It seems like they're going to be doing that. So that's great, really. The podcast, the honorable mention, is there anything else that you would like to plug before we finish?
No, that's it. I'm just, you know,
just happy with that.
If you want to give me a follow, I'm on Twitter at Hagedorn Shane. My Facebook's, facebook.com/Shane Hagedorn, I think, or Hagedorn Shane. I forget. but I know my Twitter is Hagedorn Shane. So
yeah, that's how this interview comes to be, yeah, ladies and gentlemen. So yeah.
You can see me talk about comic books and wrestling and
all the good stuff.
Random pictures of wrestling t-shirts, like the one I'm wearing now for Joe Gacy. It's my boy.
Oh, wow.
That's it, man. And I greatly appreciate this chance to talk about the wrestlings.
Yeah, like I said, it's worth repeating though. Shane's the first interview we've got, and we've got a lot lined up, which is probably the reason why we're going to carry on the ROH review, because we don't want those interviews to go to waste. Took time out of his schedule earlier than expected because I don't know time difference. Yeah, we really appreciate it, Shane. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. So, yeah, for myself, I'm a free-time pro wrestling author. For my first book, which is right here, I have it this time, A Fan's Perspective, One Man's Exploration of British Wrestling. I talk about ROH in the book. I was lucky enough to be at Unified. We've mentioned that on the show. And I was fortunate enough to be in the same hotel as the ROH wrestlers and be at the Liverpool double shot in 2007 to see the very last Samoa Joe match at the time. It was a really cool experience, and including the Nigel McGuinness Jimmy Rave match was crazy. Next up, we have my second book, which I haven't really promoted, but this is about the ROH alumni. So we've talked about people who have left ROH and gone, to WWE and stuff. So if you want to, even though it's not about ROH per se, it is about ROH alumni. So if you're wondering what's happened to AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, Samoa Joe, etc., my second book, Fan's Perspective 2016, What a Year to Be a Fan of WWE. We'll fill you in on that. And then my last book, A Fan's Perspective, How My Lifelong Dream Became a Nightmare, is where I go into real detail about Paul London possibly being the main eventer in WWE based on the information I gave in the throwback. And in terms of ROH, I was at the Orlando Double Shot, the Supercard of Honor free show. And that's, and like I said, all three of these books are available on Amazon, on paperback and Kindle. Kindle Limited for free. And if you'd like them signed, get in contact with me on my Big Cartel, fansperspective.bigcartel.com. And at Broken But Glorious Wrestling, BBG Wrestling, which me and Steve are very proud to be a part of too. Yep. We have a partnership with powerslam.tv. You get 6,500 hours of professional wrestling from 140 plus promotions. And you can use the streaming service for a month free on us using the code BROKENFREE. And enjoy that. For BBG Wrestling, like I said before, we have a Twitter, BBG Wrestling, at BBG Wrestling, sorry. Main show is at BBGW Pod, and we have a website, BBGWrestling.com. And for ourselves, our Twitter is at ROH Review, because if you say the ROH Review, you won't be able to find it.
No.
So the Instagram is at ROH Review again. The YouTube is a funny thing that we've got to put in the comments. Email is rohoutlook.com for your questions, feedback, comments, and all. That's all good. Much like Adam, get in contact, any of the socials, if you want to send us a question, or on the email, that's absolutely fine. And yeah, join us again for the ROH review, episode 16, next Monday. And yep. Until then, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you so much for the support, 9,000 listens and hundreds of views on YouTube has been fantastic. We appreciate everything that Broken But Glorious Wrestling has done for us by hosting us. And we appreciate you for tuning in or viewing our YouTube channel. So thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. And see you all again next week.
See you again next week. Bye for now.
See you later.
Bye.